You're listening to a DM podcast.
Welcome to The Five of My Life with me, Nigel Marsh. As an author, ad man and theologian, I've always been interested in people's stories. Not just those with a high profile, but people from all walks of life, regardless of fame. Which is why I created this show. Each guest who takes the Five of My Life challenge chooses a favourite film, book, song, place and possession. They tell me their choices in advance so I can research them, but they don't tell me why they've chosen them. That's the subject of our conversation. It's amazing what you can learn when discussing someone's five choices. I hope you enjoy listening to the show as much as I enjoy making it. Jamie Durie is one of Australia's most successful exports. Best known for his work as a television host of over 50 different design shows around the world, his work with Oprah, and his successful horticulturalist and design businesses, Jamie's story is all the more fascinating because of the mid-career pivot he took, which radically changed the course of his work and life. His generous openness and wholehearted commitment to the spirit of the show made for a wonderful conversation. So thank you, mate, for coming in the middle of a building. Unbelievable.
It's my everyday stuff, and I enjoy it, actually.
And so you're not living on site?
No, I'm living at the end of the street, actually. Amika and I have been renting there for, almost 3 years now.
Right.
We've had two babies in that house.
Good on you,
and I've got to say, it has been a much longer, more excruciating process than I'd ever imagined. It's put the two of us under enormous pressure.
Right.
Plenty of complaints from neighbours and all that good stuff. You know, building a house in Sydney is like that. But we're through the hard part now, and we're, you know, I guess a third of the way into the build, and things are running really, really well. And it's exciting just to finally get moving, because this was 3 years of planning, right?
Yeah.
It's excruciating.
I saw a clip of you from your wonderful new show that's coming up, and you're talking to your builders about something, and someone goes, "Dickheads!"
Oh yeah,
grunt at the neighbors.
Yeah. The interesting thing about that is that, unfortunately, here in Australia, we do have this thing called tall poppy syndrome. You don't get that in America. I worked in America 12 years, and not once did you ever get any of that sort of stuff. My neighbours wouldn't have any idea what it is we're building, right? They just see that, you know, we're potentially creating a lot of mess and, you know, building a big house. And I don't know. It's frustrating, but I know in the end everyone will be so happy with what's – I even got a letter last week from one of the heads of planning from Northern Beaches Council, who's now moved on to another position. And he said, "Jamie, this will be a landmark project." You know, he said, I take my hat off to you, both from an environmental point of view and from a design point of view. This will be a benchmark, and you should be very proud of it. And it was so nice to hear that from him, because he was the one assessing our plans for 2.5 years.
Yeah.
It was really great to get that note. He didn't have to send that. You know, it was nice.
We should get to your first choice. And
yes,
mate, you have chosen the Brad Pitt family epic Legends of the Fall.
Oh, yeah.
So tell me about that.
Well, I've watched it a few times. I love going back to it, because I relate to it in a lot of ways, because when you watch it again, it teaches you not to hold on to things that have happened to you in the past, or things that are out of your control or beyond your control, right? It teaches you to let go, you know, and Brad's character, Tristan, lived with this guilt that he hadn't gone to war, and his brother had died because he didn't, and his father resented him for it, and his other brother resented him for it, and he never really got over that, right? It was this anguish that he lived with for his whole life, and it's sort of like it lays out your life in front of you and goes, here's what could happen if you don't learn to let go.
Right.
You know, and I love to watch it again to remind myself not to hold on to the guilt from the past or things that are beyond your control, so that you can actually see the future.
And are you good at that? Are you good at letting go, or do you have to work at it?
I got to work at it.
Right.
I think everyone has to work at it. I think you'd be a robot if you didn't.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, really, We all have to continually maintain ourselves and be the best version of ourselves that we can be. Yeah. But we've all got our stuff, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's nice to check in on a regular basis and go, have I let go of that yet? Oh, God, I haven't, have I? Still got that chip on my shoulder. Off I go. Let go, Jamie. Move forward. Let's focus on the future because you've got a lot to achieve and a lot to do, and you need to be really focused if you're going to get where you want to get to, you know?
So the narratives that we tell ourselves, we choose them. There is a narrative for you. I mean, there's just a whole host of different options. I mean, for me, I could go, woe is me, I was sent to boarding school at 5 in a different country. Or you can say, well, I'm really lucky, I had loving parents, I got a beautiful wife. And you can choose the stories that you tell yourself. Yeah. But watching that film, in your honour, I thought, God, Brad Pitt looked good.
He's a beautiful specimen, isn't he?
God, he was looking good. But it made me want to ask you, how many siblings have you got?
One.
That's Chris, is it, the brother?
Yes.
Older or younger?
Younger. He's an architect. He's in the architecture area.
Okay,
yeah.
Similar guy. So, so for listeners who haven't seen the film, I'm summarising here, but it's three brothers and they all fall in love with the same woman and there's lots of, you know, guilt about, oh my God, have I taken a crack at my brother's wife and this and that. And oh my God. Yeah. Right. So a couple of questions about the film. The first is, what's your sibling dynamic? How has that played out? I wouldn't, apart from you now telling me he's an architect, when you were young kids in Tom Price, were you always competitive or was he the big bro?
yes is the answer. We've always been competitive, I think, or I have at least. I can remember us taking a pee on the side of the road in the middle of the Nullarbor when my father was driving us from Tom Price over east, which we used to do each Christmas. But, you know, we were kind of raised on red dirt and powdered milk in a mining town called Tom Price. And my brother was born in Parabidou. And it was a pretty humble existence. My mother learned how to grow roses in the desert out there in the outback. And I can remember my dad chasing around a brown snake in his underwear with a shovel. So, yeah. You know, there's lots of great memories there. I think I've built a deep connection with Outback Australia for those in those foundation years, but I do remember creating spears and all sorts of things, and I used to play a lot around with weapons and things.
With Chris or on your own?
On my own. And I remember throwing a spear, which unfortunately went through my brother's arm, and he had to be carried off to the hospital with a spear through his arm. I don't think he ever really forgave me for that. unfortunately, we don't talk a lot these days. Which is unfortunate. But you know, we've both moved on, and he's got certain beliefs that I'm not on par with, and that's his choices. And
right,
yeah. So it's a bit sad, but we had a great childhood, and yeah.
Sorry, I didn't know that. I probably wouldn't have asked if I did. Okay. Is your dad, because the film, Legends of the Fall, it's a father going off to remote area with his three sons.
Yes.
I read that mum and dad got divorced at 10.
Mm.
How do you think that has informed, how was that for you? I know it's your reality when you're 10, it just is life. But looking back, how has that potentially informed your views, behaviour, attitude?
Oh, look, I think...
And have you got a relationship with him? Did he go and then disappear, or did you stay?
With my father? With your dad? I've got a great relationship with my dad. Yeah, he's at the house every second week.
Right.
He lives here in Sydney, and we catch up for a Sunday roast, you know, every second. And he's a great man. He served our country for 12 years in the Air Force.
Right.
My mother was also in the Air Force. My cousin was an F-111 pilot. I'm probably the only one that wasn't in the Air Force, although I hear I was made on an Air Force base in Penang.
I don't want to hear.
after a bottle of bourbon with a monkey in the room, which may unleash a few ideas in your mind of where it all happened. But Dad's a great man, and we've got a really great relationship. And Yeah, I think if I can be half the man my father is, I'll be very happy.
Oh, I love it when people say nice things about other people. I should have asked about your dad, not your bro. But there you go. But hopefully after this, you're going to get on with your bro. We're going to move to your second choice, which makes me laugh. Because in your honour, I read 700 pages of Jeffrey David Roberts' Shantaram. And what listeners need to know is barely 40 minutes ago, jury called me and said, can I change my book? And I said, you are... bloody kidding me.
I think you called me recalcitrant, which I took on board as a bit of a compliment.
So what we're going to...
Sorry, mate, but it's a bloody good read, isn't it?
Oh, it's a great read.
Hey?
It's a great read. But what we're going to do for the first time ever on Five My Life,
yes,
because you are who you are, special privileges.
Don't give me any favours.
Well, I'm going to. I'm going to talk about Shantaram, because yes, I've got a couple of questions, because I read the bloody thing. And then we're going to talk about the book that you actually, 40 minutes before the interview, wanted me to talk about instead. So, why did you choose Shantaram?
Look, for me, it was, again, it's one of those books that I go back to at yep, various times in my life. What Shantaram taught me, because, you know, he's for those of you who haven't, you know, read the book, and you know, he obviously dealt heroin, got busted, you know, got locked up in an Indian jail for years and years and years in life, and then happened to escape, and it's a great story, but it's a story of redemption, right? And he then spent, I guess, the rest of his life giving back to the poor, helping out the community who helped him and harbored him, finding a way to make up for his sins, if you like. And that was his form of redemption, right? And I guess I related to that in a lot of ways, because he didn't want to be known as the heroin addict, right? In the same way that in my professional career, I don't deserve to be known as a stripper. But we all know that was, you know, the first few years of my working life. And I started at the tender age of 16. And left home when I was 15, and off I went. I was in Las Vegas and all over. And it's funny how often it still comes up. And they were the greatest years of my life. I mean, don't get me wrong. As a 21-year-old boy, you know, traveling the world and in a beautiful big Broadway show, and it was great fun, and I loved it. And I think, you know, travel has been for me the university of life. I then came back and studied horticulture for 4 years and sort of did other things. But I guess I carried that with me embarking into my career. And I have done all I can do in my career to date and will continue to be known for other things than just what the public defined me of in those earlier years.
Yeah. So I have to say, and I don't want to blow too much smoke up your ass, mate, but is you've done a really good job at that, because coming fresh to you, because I'm 60 years of age, I've never, you know, never met you, never had any communication with you,
yeah,
and then invite you on the show. I mean, weird coincidence, invite you on the show, you say yes, and then literally the next week, I sit next to you and your beautiful family at a restaurant. How weird was that?
It was bizarre.
Okay, Jamie, right, Amika, hello. You go, wow, the weirdest thing.
I know. But the kids were pulling the Sri Lankan curry off the table. Did you see that?
Yeah. But the thing is, so investigating you, hopefully you'll be pleased to hear this, it doesn't actually come up. If you came from Mars,
yeah,
and you never
right,
heard of Jamie Durie,
yeah,
right? You get your wonderful work, your environmental work, your design, your architecture, your garden. You don't actually get. So if you keep digging, you'll get manpower, but you actually
yes,
don't get quite. You don't get a lot of it.
Yes.
Right. So I don't know. I imagine in 1993, that's what it would be. So there's a story. Honestly, the media, God love them, where Marianne Faithfull, that there is a story, whether it's apocryphal or not, where in 1969 there was a drug bust in Primrose Hill, and she was going out with Mick Jagger, and the police were all very, very happy and leaked it to the Sun that they found a Mars bar where potentially, usually Mars bars aren't kept. Yeah, indeed. And so that's the Marianne Faithfull.
Is that right?
That's right. Anyway, whether it's true or not, she is then launching her 27th album in Australia in 2017? And the first question the journalist asks is, so Marion, tell me about the Mars bar. And you go, for the love of God, I'm a talented artist.
I know. And you know, for the first 10 years of my career outside of that, that was the first question that most journalists threw out there because, you know, they didn't really have a whole lot else to go to.
Yeah.
So, yes, I worked and have worked and will continue to work really hard. But also I've learned that you don't necessarily have to prove anything to anyone, right? If you're happy enough with what you've put forward in life, you should feel really good about your day.
I love what you're saying, where I actually think if you do what you've done, then the thing that you might not want as your calling card actually becomes really, really impressive if you own it, right?
Yeah.
Over the years. So there's an actress, I forget who she is, but who started on Home and Away and now she's a Hollywood A-lister, right?
Yes.
And when she's, there's one actress who goes, oh, stupid show, I had to do it, blah, blah, blah. And you go, oh, okay. This actress goes, yeah, I loved Home and Away, fabulous experience. And you go, yeah great. It's part of you. It's like the barrier reef. You lay down layers. You go, well, I'm looking at a very successful business person and TV host and author. And you go, yeah, and it makes you more interesting, more admirable. Bloody hell, there was a successful thing. You weren't like a useless bloke in Wollongong RSL cracking it out to 20. You were top of your game.
We were the first Australian cabaret act to ever get a residency on Las Vegas Boulevard. And we were playing to audiences of 8,000 people in South Africa in Sun City, all of them women, of course, most of them. But it was incredible. I got to meet Bishop Desmond Tutu and did charity events in Africa over there with him. The amount of people I met, and I must have worked in, I don't know, I think we were averaging about 18 countries a year for 9 years. So I really did get to see the world through different eyes. Dated princesses and all sorts of things and just lived in Manila for a little while and worked in Taiwan and Japan and New York and France and Spain and England, played the West End Theatre in London and In Excess went on after us. And
I love it.
And then, you know, had a few beers with Michael Hutchence before he passed, God rest his soul. You know, these were great experiences that I will never forget.
But there's something which... I got this way, to my shame, I once was, I won't mention her name, she's a gorgeous lady, interviewed by a daytime telly person. And I was internally, secretly, to my shame, being a little bit judgmental.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I wasn't telling you, I'm just thinking, right? And met her, and she was incredibly professional, intelligent, nice, welcome. And I felt such shame.
Yeah.
Right? Is the truth is, doing anything well is actually... admirable. It's not easy. Mate, I couldn't dance for 1 minute and women would ask me to, to stop, right?
Yeah.
It's to do anything that gets, national, let alone international success, forget what it's in, that's incredibly successful. And then actually what it's in, that's pretty fucking clever as well. So I think the time for... you're not that you hide it. I think it's a fantastic part of your oeuvre.
It's thank you. Yeah, I think you bounce off those things in life, right? And they catapult you into other areas. And that's what happened with me.
Yeah,
I can remember when I came back to Australia and I started studying horticulture. Went back to college for 4 years, the first headline. When I came out of that was from hot pants to pot plants.
Oh, and, tell me about the Mars bar.
But you know what?
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
It's a part of my life and it's enabled me to really catapult into a whole different and use what I've learned as an expert, as a landscape designer, in positive ways.
Yeah.
You know, I knew back then, living in hotels in all sorts of strange countries, I knew back then I was suffering nature deficit disorder.
Right.
And I think a lot of people go through that, right? And I knew that I wanted to work in a creative field because I was designing with huge lighting shows and pyrotechnics and stages, and costumes and stage sets and things. And I thought, well, if I can use this same design expertise in a positive way for the environment and use an ever-changing object like a plant to design with, wow, wouldn't that be a skill? And there weren't many people around back then doing it. There were only a handful 25 years ago. So I started up this little business called Patio back in 1998. And who knew that it would go on to employ 170 odd people around the world.
Yeah. Fantastic. I'm going to bring you back to Shantaram.
Yes.
Because the bloke goes off at the end to Sri Lanka.
Yes.
Which is not irrelevant, given A, I bumped into you in a Sri Lankan restaurant, yeah. And B, that is your heritage. Would you mind talking a little bit about that?
Yeah, certainly. So my grandmother was born in Kandy, grew up in a rice plantation. My mother was born in Gaul, and my grandmother and grandfather were both in the Air Force, and they met in Sri Lanka. He was sort of doing a bit of work with the intelligence bureau, and off they go. And so for me, going back to Sri Lanka, I did a documentary with Jeff Jantz many, many years ago, and it was called Jeff and Jamie's Sri Lanka. And it was so fantastic going back to visit my mother's house, seeing where she came from. I do feel a deep connection with Sri Lanka and the tropics and the food and so forth. And so, you know, when my grandmother first came out to Australia, black as, and my grandfather was white, English, and, you know, she used to get spat at in the street. Oh. There's all sorts of things happening back in those days. Right. And suffered a whole lot of sort of discrimination when she first came out. And that was back in the day. And I think, you know, she rose above adversity and ended up having her own little TV show on Channel 9, would you believe? She used to do cooking classes with her curries. She then went on to be a floral designer. And she did wonderful things with her life and her career. She passed too young, unfortunately, with a brain aneurysm. But God, she was an amazing woman. And it did inspire me a lot. And I've always felt a very, very deep connection to Sri Lanka.
Oh, fantastic. Let's talk about the second book.
If you're going to rap me over the knuckles publicly, we better at least
okay, go for your life, jury. It's called Long Path, Our Future Needs, An Antidote for Short-Termism, which is hilarious, given you call me up to change it.
I know. But I couldn't not share this read with you and the listeners, because to be honest, it's kind of everything that I'm chasing right now, right? Yeah. I mean, this is about it's the antidote to short-termism, and it's about tackling problems that are bigger than you and bigger than things that will be solved in just your lifetime, right? And that doesn't just go towards climate change and the environment and so forth, because it will take a few years to fix that. But it's about contributing everything you have today into your life in a very selfless way in order to create a better future for people when you are not around.
I that's a fabulous message.
Honestly, I watched the TEDx. I watched yours too, by the way. Yeah. It's helping me with my time management already. But I watched the TEDx and I was like, wow, that is so on the money right now. You listen to anyone that's come from a place of adversity and they'll have something wise to share with you, right? But I think this long path is something we should all be striving for. And ironically, that's been the driver behind this new show that I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know, for me, growing home is how do I build the greenest possible house I can possibly build? And how do I bring on board a range of like-minded individuals who can help me achieve this? And it's a quest, right? And if I'm going to do a show about building a greenhouse, then I'm going to turn the cameras on myself first and my own family. And we are going to practice what we preach.
Yep.
And we are going to suck up the high interest rates and the increased building costs and all the stresses and the turbulence that goes with it. Because I think when you start to look at a house that's powered with geothermal energy and solar panels and all the other great stuff that's available to us now, this is how we should be building houses for the future. After our home, I want this to continue on for many, many years.
Right.
And I hope someone else takes over the reins and hosts this show and continues to, just like Grand Designs, this is kind of like the eco version of Grand Designs. Because everyone's got their own version of building their best version of a green home with what they can afford and the resources that are available to them, right?
Yeah.
And if we all did that, Like, for instance, everyone in Australia should have a rainwater tank. Yeah. Everyone in Australia should have solar panels on their roof. If each of us just did that one little thing, the magnificent impact that this would have on our natural resources would be incredible. But we're such a long way from that right now. But there's this massive interest in eco-tech and technology, and it's such a fast-moving pace that in the last 3 to 5 years, I have met so many inspirational people who are doing great things in the environmental space. I want to put them on camera. Right. I want to show this journey. And that's what The Long Path is about.
I can't wait to read it. I've had a couple of interesting conversations recently, one with a person who's talking about solar paint.
Yes.
Holy moly.
Yes.
You go, wow, we can paint. I mean, we can't yet, but you're working on being able to paint things that generate energy.
Yes. And then someone else. Photovoltaic, little ball bearings that sit within the paint, and it absorbs energy and harvests energy into your battery systems.
Because the other person was talking about wearable solar.
Oh, same thing.
Whoa! So my hat.
Yeah.
You know, you go, this is amazing.
So yeah. I drive an electric vehicle. Drove one in today as well, and it helped me get here a little bit quicker, which is why I was only 20 minutes late. But you know, now with our house, we are plugging our EV into the house, and the house charges the car through the solar panels, and then the car becomes a backup battery system for the house and charges the house as well, right? I mean, people are coming out of the woodwork with this amazing stuff now. Yeah. We've all got to think more responsibly about the way we're building our houses and the impact that we will have and our future generations, because this house, trust me, will be around for hundreds of years.
But the important thing is, get your wife and kids in by Christmas, mate.
Oh, no,
she's waited too long.
She reminds me every day.
Now, we're moving to your third choice. And on Five My Life, every one of my guests' songs gets put on a Spotify playlist, which is sensational because obviously it's incredibly diverse. And now, Chris Martin of Coldplay wrote 5 songs for Gwyneth Paltrow in his life and relationship with her. And you have chosen the one that he wrote for her after her dad died, Fix You.
For me, Fix You by Chris Martin, Coldplay, was a bit of a wake-up call. And look, it's no secret that I've had a string of relationships, been engaged a few times and finally now with an amazing partner and have 2 beautiful kids. But it took me a while to get it right. And for a lot of reasons, I was choosing people that I felt I needed to fix.
Ah, they weren't choosing you to fix you. You were choosing them to fix them.
Yes, I think we both found common ground. I went through some sexual abuse when I was young. Some of my partners did as well. And funnily enough, you don't talk about that on the first date.
No.
But there's a reason that you come together, I think.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, I guess you try to fix the person you're with, but actually it's your own issues you need to work.
You're projecting,
for, yeah. Yeah, that you're projecting, right? And that song, for me, that's what I take from it, right?
Right.
And it wasn't until I'd sort of started to do the work on myself and started to own my childhood and some of those things that had happened to me after the divorce that I started to go, oh, hang on a second. The real issue here is me.
Right.
How do I take a few steps back, process that, then go forward and accept anyone that you're with moving forward in your life from this day onwards for all of their imperfections and perfections and love them, you know, without judgment, effortlessly love them.
Yeah.
You know? And so so it's certainly – that song really came about in a defining time in my life in my 30s when I knew I had to make some significant changes – if I was going to settle down and have a family.
Right.
And it, they were great words, and it's a beautiful song, and I still listen to it to remind myself of some of the fixing that needs to go on within yourself. Yep. And it's not until you do that work that you can then be free to be with and find the goodness in anyone that you're with.
That is one of the most touching stories on Five My Life around a song choice we've ever had. And thank you, mate. Mm. Gosh. Therapy? Do you do therapy?
Yes, of course. Right. Yeah.
And how... I mean, I've never done therapy because I am scared. I've got it all.
Have you got it all sorted?
No. All under the carpet.
Oh, yeah, okay.
So for me, it's
I did that for plenty of years.
It's repression, mate.
We blokes love to do that. Yeah,
but I'm trying to get through to the grave with it still locked up. Right. So,
noble of you to say.
Well, I'm terrified that someone, I'll go to the therapist and they will uncover all the deep issues that I've got. I've got them battened down.
Yeah.
I hear awful stories about therapists and I hear wonderful stories. Did you land on one that immediately was this woman or man gets me, or did you have to go through a few to get someone who was helpful?
I went through a few. When I was in the US, I was seeing a lady in New York who was fabulous. I then found someone here in Sydney who was amazing and ironically an ex-New Yorker as well.
Right.
Yeah, she really helped me lay it all out on the table.
Yeah.
Process it, deal with it, and enabled me to really move on and kind of, you know, not bury those things under the carpet, so to speak. Yeah.
And then your romantic history, you were saying it's not a secret. And apologies if I don't read the celebrity mag, so I'm not up on it. Is it the E word engaged or the M word married?
We're engaged at the moment. Yeah.
And is there a date or are you?
There is a date. Yes.
Do we know it or is that a secret?
No. We haven't publicly thrown it out there, but for you, Nige, maybe I will.
Well, don't mention it unless you want, because there are a few thousand people that listen to this. I mean, we can edit it out if you want. Well, when is it? Is it this year or next year?
Well, poor Amika has, you know, she's been pretty much pregnant the entire time I've been with her. So, you know, she's just given birth to two beautiful, beautiful babies, Bo and Nash, I just adore. And they have really changed my life and changed and added a lot more meaning to what it is I do. I think everything changes. And, you know, I've also got an amazing daughter in the US, Taylor.
Yep.
I think we learned a lot off each other as well. She's an incredible girl. She just had a birthday the other day and we had lots of FaceTime with the kids. So we've all got a great relationship. I think Amika just wanted to wait for the dust to settle before we planned a wedding, which we're in the process of doing now. So yes.
And have you, I mean, you can't, it's like you can't ask a woman their weight. You can't ask a person if they're done or not, but I'm going to. Are you done or are there more kids, more little jury ets coming along?
Well, it's funny you say that.
This is the pregnancy reveal.
No. God, there's a lot happening on this show, isn't there? We've loved, you know, having these two babies together. Of course, Amika does a lot of the hard work in the birth, and all respect. I was in the room both times, though, and I did pull both of them out.
Right. You're not like claiming credit, are you, man?
No, not at all. But not unlike pulling a turnip out of the ground. So I think my gardening skills really came in handy there. We've talked about a possible number three down the track, so that may or may not happen in the near distance. And
you might not thank me for the story, but my three was 3 and 4.
Oh, wow. So that's a whole different ballgame of parenting, isn't it?
That is 4 under the age of 6.
Wow.
Yeah, that's right.
Mate, you need to write a book on that. Have you?
That's the one I've given you.
I can't wait to read
it. Fat 40 and Fired in all good bookshops, as they
say.
Well,
maybe I look forward to reading that. Yeah. It's going to be great. Thank you, mate.
Your fourth choice on Five My Life. I just love the way different people respond to the format. And jury, I mean, you like an epic. Your film was an epic. Your book is an epic. And you've gone large, right? You've gone large, mate. It's not Avalon. It's Africa. Could we be any more specific, or are we sticking with Africa?
Look, I've had so many great experiences in Africa that I got to say, every time I go there, my heart just opens up. I love hearing the kids sing. Of course, we all love seeing the Big Five. I've been on a number of safaris. I think one of my first trips over there, I was doing a documentary for Plan, a child sponsorship agency, and I was sponsoring some kids in Africa. And we did a documentary about HIV/AIDS at the time. One of the reasons, and looking at the reasons why the new infection rate of HIV in Uganda had dropped lower than any other area, and what their big secret was. And so we discovered that because there was no radio, no TV in some of these villages, right, it was street theatre. And they were doing plays about, you know, and necessity is the mother of all invention, right? And you look at the atrocities that virus has caused over the years and the sadness that it's brought. They managed to get the new infection rates down lower than any other country at that time. And it was really interesting. So we went into the hospitals. I interviewed mothers who were HIV positive, a young 8-year-old girl who had fully blown AIDS and tuberculosis and had come from a village that was all affected. And it was street theatre, and they had just gone to these great lengths to pass on those messages to the locals to sort of, you know, control the issue.
Yeah.
And it was so amazing. Another trip I went to sit on the border of the Congo for 3 days with 17 silverbacks.
Right.
You know, another time I'd been there and we were doing stories on some of the architecture and the natural environmental architecture that was used to create some of the buildings in that area. I was there with National Geographic 1 year doing a story on the last tribe of the Pygmies and visiting a little village called Kasoro. It's just such a rich country. I love the food. I love the people. But it also can be quite scary. I remember my cameraman was probably 300 metres away from me. I had stuffed my money down my sock and my shoe there and wedged it down in the shoe. And I was taking photographs with a long lens camera. And there were a couple of fairly wild guys there that were drunk on arak, which is banana juice in that area, right? And you could see the wildness in their eyes and they were sweating, and turned around and he goes, "You take my spirit, you take my spirit, you know, and you give me money." And within about 10 seconds, like there were 20 of them surrounding me with machetes.
Right.
And I thought, God, this is it. Yeah. I'm in Uganda. There's no one around. And my cameraman, who's about 6'10", he sees me and just starts running at them and screaming. And for some weird reason, they all dispersed. And I'll never forget that moment because it was like, whoa, you got to be careful about going into countries like that. And we see this as just taking a photograph, but they see this as an invasion of their privacy, right?
Yeah.
And it sort of taught me to be a little bit less invasive and a little bit more discreet about, you know, because you are taking a little piece of their life and a little piece of their image, and some of it is pretty hard to watch for a lot of people. Yeah, that moment taught me to really respect whoever you're with, wherever you are, and take on board internally what's going on around you so that you can go back to your own country and learn from what you've experienced.
Are you recognised in Africa?
My show did play there in Joburg and places like that, but certainly not out in those villages. And that's why I loved getting out there. You know, I love getting into some of the small little places. I mean, one of the villages I went to, there were quite a few of them suffering from leprosy. There was another place I went to where the whole village had been wiped out by Ebola.
Mm.
You know, so we were all wearing masks, of course, and like, it's real. It's a gritty country, you know, and there's a lot of hardship, but there's also a lot of happy people.
Mm. The reason I asked about you being recognised is one of my other guests, with the remarkable Brian Keenan, the guy who was poor bastard in a hostage in Beirut for four years. Incredible story, an incredible man.
Yeah.
So no one's ever heard of him, and he's tied to a radiator, beaten, just horrible for 4 years, and then he comes out. Mm. And then he wrote an amazing book in an evil cradling. But when I spoke to him, he said something that has always stuck with me, which is, fame is its own kind of prison.
Yep.
And you go, mate, so you've actually been in a prison. I mean, it was a basement tied to a radiator. Yeah. You are equating, holy moly, you're saying, well, that is a prison, but trust me, having paparazzi or whatever, you go.
How beautifully articulated was that statement? I didn't make the choice to be on TV, you know. I went and studied horticulture and was quite happy to bubble away on in my little store patio and design gardens. That's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I had no plan of being on TV. So when I got the tap on the shoulder from one of Don Burke's producers, who then, I guess, took me on to Channel 9 and hosted Backyard Blitz, and God, I've done 56 TV shows, series around the world since then, right? It's a lot of TV. I didn't realise the confinement that would come with that he speaks of, and the fact that you then, everything you do becomes public knowledge. Your breakups become all part of, you know, the newspaper, and your highs and your lows are all just laid out for everyone to see, and it's tough. You've got to learn to have thick skin. And unfortunately, my partners in the past have had to learn to have thick skin, and so is my daughter and my kids, you know. So you really do end up exposing yourself and your family to a lot of press that doesn't necessarily have to be there. But if you're clever enough, I think, and Oprah's done this extremely well, which is why I loved working with her.
Yeah.
She has used her career and her fame in such a positive way. And I watched her do it over the years, and then when I finally got to work with her and met her, I thought, wow, this is inspirational. I love what you're doing. I want to continue. Stop playing the victim, jury.
Yep.
You know, fair enough, take a punch on the chin every now and then and get a bit of bad press, or, okay, you had a bad breakup, but use your press in positive ways. And create more awareness around positive things that are going on in the environmental sector, in gardening, in all those sorts of facets that I'm passionate about. I've learned over the years to just deflect and let that thing, you know, wash off you. Tomorrow's the new day, and use your profile in positive ways.
I really like the place where it seems that you are in, mate. You seem to be happy in your skin, where if you have done the work and owned a few things and are future focused and thinking about the contribution you're going to make, there isn't much that they can say if you let it wash over you that matters. It's a problem if you're a young man or woman, it can be devastating. Yeah. If you've got something to hide, so you've got, you know, you haven't just got your family in Avalon, you've got another one in Mascot, well then you constantly, you know, worried because they might spring you. But if you're living the life that you're living, Richard E. Grant does something where he will stand on a pavement. So perhaps he will run up to him and he'll stand there and the photographer's like a bit embarrassed to take 100 photos, and he will still stand there going, have you got enough?
Yeah.
That's the way to do it. Take as many as you want.
Yeah.
You know, I'm buying an onion. You know, do you want me to hold the onion up? You know, then the pictures
are
worthless. You go, right. And they sort of walk away.
Yeah.
So you go, and I love what you say about, you know, suck it up, jury. You go, lots of people give their right arm to have some of your good fortune.
Yeah.
So that goes, you know, it's yin and yang. Yeah. I might get accosted in a shopping centre with someone saying, I loved you so-and-so.
Yep.
But I can also do your amazing work for charities and the environment. So,
that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think I would have had the opportunity to get involved with the charities or the environmental work I've done over the years had I not have had that profile. So, you know, I continue to nurture that. Because I feel like I can. That's become a tool in my little toolbox.
Yeah.
That I can then wheel out to do all sorts of great stuff.
Talking of tools.
Yes.
You've brought one in as your possession.
Oh yeah.
Now people don't know this, but he changed his possession as well as trying to change his book. He's a wild card, jury.
Oh, mate, you're gonna love this.
Now, describe it for our listeners who might not see it.
Okay, so let's turn the clock back a few years. I was doing some environmental journalism for a Channel 7 show called Sunday Night. And my amazing EP, Dale Padgett, who's a great journo, travelled with me to Montana. And then previous to that, I had done a story on climate change in the Arctic and dived under 5 feet of ice, almost lost my life down there. And I've worked with some of the greatest journalists of all time. And for me, that was one of my favourite jobs, right? Got to travel. I travelled through 13 cities in Ethiopia. But one story that really stuck with me was we were doing a story on climate change and how it had affected, how there'd been this increased attack on humans by grizzly bears at the foothills of Yellowstone National Park in Montana. And you go, well, how does people don't often make the connection between climate change and an increase of bear attacks on humans. But this is how it happened. So with the temperature changes in the US, by the way, 37 of the state flowers and trees have moved out of their state of origin purely because of climate change, right? Because we're warming up the world.
Right.
And the white pine beetle had started to attack these conifers. And because the winters weren't cool enough to deter these white pine beetles. So, of course, the bears are running out of food, which are these nuts that come from the white pines. So when they get hungry, they search for whatever's closest, and that is tourists in tents. And we were staying in this little town called Cody, Wyoming, and I got to experience this incredible. It was just shocking to me that everyone's got arms on over there, right? Yeah. Everyone's packing a pistol, and they're all walking down the street, and it's just normal to bear arms. And you know, God, you read these atrocities every 2 weeks now in the US, and it's shocking. So I walked into one of these gun shops, and I noticed in the front, because it's just astonishing as a tourist over there. You walk in, and it's all so normalized.
Yeah.
And I saw this incredible piece of art in the front window, and it was this. It was this beautiful bow, right?
This amazing. Jamie has brought it in. Thank you so much, mate. Wow.
I have to show you the way that it comes together.
Look at that.
This is all hand-stitched, and it's a recurve bow, and it was handmade by a First Nation Indigenous American. Look at that, mate.
Beautiful, beautiful.
Out of several pieces of wood, and then, you know, the leather's been stitched, hand-stitched. It's engraved.
And that's the...
There's bone at the tip of each of the pieces. And I was always an archer. I've kept a lot of bows, and I love archery. And I saw this piece of art, and I just thought, oh, my God, this is absolutely exquisite. And why is it sitting in the front window? Why hasn't anyone bought it yet? It was so inexpensive. And I said to the guy, I said, I've got to have this. I'll take it immediately. And he said, would you like to hear a story about where it came from? I said, yeah, please do. It was this wealthy man who'd actually commissioned this First Nation American to make this recurve bow for him to hunt bears, would you believe?
Right.
Which, of course, I would never do and have no intention of doing with this bow, but it's a beautiful power. It's a 90-pound recurve bow. I mean, it's got some force on it, and it took a year to make, and he never picked it up. He never arrived. It turns out he was flying his single-engine aircraft over to Cody, Wyoming, and it went down.
Right.
And he lost his arm. So, of course, he can't use his bow.
Right.
So I'd walked in, I think, 2 weeks after the accident, and there was the bow in the front window. And I get to be the lucky custodian due to his misfortune. So it was very sad what happened to him. Although I'm happy for the bears that there's not another hunter out there taking down these gorgeous creatures. But look at that, isn't it extraordinary? And it just reminds me of the sensitivity around not just what's happening over there in terms of climate change has no boundaries, but also how precious these creatures are, and that there is still hunting going on that shouldn't shouldn't be going on. And there's extinction rates are catastrophic all over the world. Anyway, that's a beautiful piece that I keep behind the bar.
Mate, you have. I forgive you for changing your choice. I love it My guests bring in. I don't ask guests to, but it's just a beautiful piece, and I love the stories.
Well, I do have an agenda. Of course, if the interview wasn't going well, I could use it on you. And I've got the arrow here with me. So let's see how the rest of this goes, Nige.
Well, I've got a question for you. What is the kindest thing that anyone has ever done for you?
I tend to travel through life pretty quickly, and I was working a lot in the US leading up to my 40th birthday, and I had a dear friend of mine who's passed away now, Greg Rapp, who was a lovely man, and we had a very long, great friendship together, and he taught me everything there is to know about mid-century modern architecture in Palm Springs. And he very, very kindly gave up his home, and I invited about 300 of my mates from around the world who all flew into Palm Springs, and we had this incredible birthday party, which was a 40th, and I think that was a really, really kind gesture. And on top of that, there was a really well-known director over there who I'd been doing a bit of TV with, who had gone back through all of my years and somehow found little pieces of archives of all the TV shows I'd done. The moment I met Barack Obama and Michelle, and from my earlier years on Oprah Winfrey, and had spent months and months and months putting together this amazing video. And I think my whole 40th in Palm Springs, I was so grateful for someone that had taken the time to remind me of what I'd so far done in my life.
Yeah.
And that was one of the kindest things. And I never really got to thank him as well as I would have liked. Greg was such a selfless man, and he passed away about 3 years ago now, and he was just so knowledgeable. And we used to do Palm Springs Modernism Week, and we would go and visit Elvis's old house and Frank Sinatra's old house, and I got to see so many things through his eyes. And for him to open up his house, my friends and I will never forget it. And it was not just the experience that I had through this, but that the chance that I gave to a lot of my mates who had never been to Palm Springs and got the chance to sort of see a lot of incredible architecture and meet a lot of really beautiful people. And it was a great time in my life. I'll never forget that birthday.
So I'm glad I asked. I forget who said it, someone far cleverer than me, but the real question is, what do you do for others at the end of the day? If you're lucky enough not to be in an appalling war zone, whatever, but you know, what do you do for others? I mean, it's wonderful to have those moments where other people get you to pause and reflect and think. And then I think it's an incredibly impressive journey that you have been on and you are on. And we haven't got enough time to talk, unfortunately, about all the amazing stuff you've got coming up. But bloody more power to you, mate. And there's one last question that with your scatterbrain, chaotic, I saw a wonderful clip with Amika going, it's chaos living with Jamie. And I got, we had a book. I know three people that know you, and we were running a book on how late you would be, right?
Oh, yeah.
And the average was 45 minutes. And listeners, I have to say, it was only 20.
Wow.
For Jamie time, on Jamie time, that's early. He was actually early.
Well, I hear that for Jamie Oliver, that's about 2 hours. But he's done pretty well, hasn't he? He's a great bloke too. I had a beer with him in London.
You're doing something with him coming up, aren't you?
Oh, no, I had a chat to him a few years back about doing a little show called Jamie Squared, which was, you know, garden and food.
Yeah.
But I love what Jamie's done with his career, and he's a spectacular bloke. And it kind of inspired me to get started on the show that I'm filming at the moment.
The Homegrown.
Growing Home, yeah.
Sorry. But I have to say, I'm not trying to shepherd you towards a certain answer, but the final question on Five of My Life is always, who do you want to hear on Five of My Life next and why?
Here's your challenge, my friend.
Okay. Got my pen.
It's the very bloke we were just speaking of.
Oliver?
Jamie Oliver.
Have you got his email?
I can get to him, yes.
Done. Well, it's not my challenge, it's your challenge.
I love the way you handled that straight back to me. Oh, no, he's a great man, and he's done so much with his career, and I am inspired by him and Oprah and a lot of people I've worked with over the years. So, I'd love to hear his yarn. Be good.
Beautiful. Jamie Durie, thank you for coming on to Five My Life and sharing your stories, mate.
My pleasure.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you follow Five of My Life, you might enjoy my latest book, Smart, Stupid and 60. In it, I write about a number of the issues discussed on the show. It's the 20-year follow-on from my first book, Fat, 40 and Fired. If you have any feedback on the book or suggestions for the show, please get in touch via my website, nigelmarsh.com.